He's my guest in the studio. He's the founder, conductor and the principal composer for the MFO, otherwise known as the Mace Francis Orchestra. He started playing guitar with a band called The Hounds, which won a Battle of the Bands in Victoria. Since then, he's completed a Bachelor of Jazz Composition and studied and performed with many names of distinction, including Frank Foster, Jim Pugh, Lalo Schifrin, John Gordon, Fred Wesley and Graham Lyle. He's currently touring the Mace Francis Orchestra, supporting its fourth album release, which has been described as a dinky-dye national treasure by Australian Stage Online. Mace Francis, welcome to Now's the Time.
Thank you for having us.
Mace, tell us about your musical background. What were your primary musical influences and who encouraged you to get into music?
Well, it was my family. Well, my parents are artistic. My mum's a painter and my dad's a sculptor. And they sort of raised a family of four kids on art alone. So it was good to grow up in a household where it was sort of possible to sort of do an artistic thing. And, you know, if it was rebelling and you'd have to, you know, get a real job.
So, and I'd imagine there would have been a lot of music happening in that background setting.
Yeah, they always had music on. But I only sort of got interested in music in high school, so it was sort of a bit of a late starter, I guess. But friends of mine at high school had a band, and I wanted to join the band, so I had to learn an instrument. So got a guitar and just started playing like that. And my sister was a big influence on my musical sort of choices. She was into, you know, the Rolling Stones and Neil Young and all those sorts of things. And then she married a jazz musician, a guitarist. He got me sort of listening to a lot of things, and then there was a music course in Geelong, where I grew up in Victoria, which was, a dedicated jazz sort of TAFE course.
And these days you're based in Perth.
Yeah, well, from that course, once I finished that, I auditioned to get into the WA of Performing Arts course in Perth, and I moved over in 2000, and I'm still there.
And what sort of culture differences did you find when you moved to Perth as far as the music scene is concerned?
Well, it's smaller than Victoria and the Melbourne scene, because I would see a lot of jazz in Melbourne. There's less venues, but there's a lot of quality musicians. You know, the concentration of the musicians is concentrated.
And I noticed Jamie Olers is back there.
Yeah, well, he's taken over at... He runs the jazz course at Whopper now, and he's kicked that place into gear. He works hard. I mean, he's an incredible musician. And
Whopper stands for?
Oh, the WA Academy of Performing Arts.
Right, okay.
Yeah, he's got that place happening. And there's a lot of, especially tenor saxophone players, moving over from Melbourne and Sydney to study under him.
It's certainly got an individual style, the MFO. It's a groove that seems to me to be driven by a freight train. It's melodiously accessible with highly artistic soloing. What did you set out to create when you formed the MFO 5 years ago, Mace?
Well, myself and sort of the other members in the band, we all played in the WA Youth Jazz Orchestra, which was led by Graham Lyle. He did when he was still in Perth, encouraged us to, you know, write for the band, and he was right into sort of original music and finding your own voice, and a lot of us did the composition course. And then when we were too old for the youth orchestra, I wanted to keep writing for sort of a large ensemble, so all the guys that I sort of was studying with, we got together and we just started rehearsing and workshopping original music, and then it was starting to sound okay. And then we put on a few gigs, and then it sort of just kind of got a life of its own, and it's been a lot of fun.
And with so many young instrumentalists in the band, has it been easy to retain a consistent lineup? And how important is that to a little big band like this?
Well, I think it's very important. I mean, the lineup has been pretty consistent. We've had a few changes. Recently, we had a few changes. You know, one of the saxophone players is now trying to be a professional golfer, so he's got to practice putting. But, you know, these things happen.
Yeah.
I think, you know, a consistent lineup is very important, because especially as all sort of, you know, young musicians and
That's
composers.
Right. Everyone would have their own aspirations.
Yeah, and we're all sort of, it's grown together. We've all grown together. Like the trumpet player, Callum, he joined the band. He was 16, and I sort of spotted him through the youth jazz orchestra, and he's now 21 or 22, and he's going to be a force to be reckoned with on the national scene soon. So it's been good. We've all sort of grown together, encouraged ourselves, and sort of, yeah, formed a sound, which is, well, I think it looks sort of a little bit different to most big band sounds.
It certainly is. Entitled Jelly Belly. Mace, tell us about this one.
Well, it features our guitar player, Tim Jago, again. Tim, incredible musician who has been invited to be to do his master's and teacher's assistant at the University of Miami starting in August. And it's a bit of a sort of a rock and roll big band sort of thing, you know, heavy rock kind of drum beat, something a little bit different. And Tim sort of shows off his wares in this one.
Mace is a guitarist, and noticeably, I hear no piano in the lineup of this band. Mace, is there any precedence for this that you've based the concept of the MFO on?
Well, being a guitar player, I had a preference to guitar. It was also, well, yeah, it was a musical choice just because the sonic possibilities of a guitar, you know, you got a bit more possibility. I mean, then the argument is, well, I could have had a keyboard player, but it was also the choice of sort of some of the venues that we were looking at to perform at were really small,
mm-hmm.
and they just didn't fit a keyboard. So, and I was living with a guitar player, sharing a house with Joanne Druitt, who was a first guitar player, and she was, I mean, incredible guitar player who now lives in Europe. And yeah, she could outplay most of the piano players. So yeah, it was just one of those things. And now I really like the sound. It sort of opens up
some possibilities.
Yeah, it sort of opens up the space. You know, sometimes piano, it's, you know, you got 10 fingers and they fill a lot of that space.
That's what I was going to say.
So, yeah.
We were trying to think of a precedent over the years, John Buchanan and myself, before I came to Air Tonight, and he thought about possibly a big small band led by Jerry Mulligan. And
yeah, the Cordless. Sure. Yeah, I mean, I love that band. I mean, that had no piano or guitar. I mean, Jerry Mulligan sometimes played piano, but yeah, it adds, and it sort of, it means you sort of use the horns a bit more to sort of create the harmony, and I really love the sound of, you know, the single note guitar lines with especially saxophones. You know, it gets this sort of almost a singing quality sometimes. Mm. You know, having someone like Joanne and now Tim, I mean, they're just amazing musicians. So not saying there's incredible piano, there's amazing piano players in Perth, but yeah, it was just sort of a choice at the start that stuck and I really like.
This may be your orchestra, of course, but you also present compositions from the other band members. You clearly immerse yourself in the collaborative process. How easy is that with so many creative personalities in the band?
Well, it sort of, the band started off to perform as many sort of WA composers as possible, but that was the idea, but then not many people got around to it because it takes a fair bit of effort. Mm. And I was writing and so we sort of performed a lot of my music, and then some of the guys in the band sort of started bringing things in, and they were really good, and then they kept bringing in even better stuff. And so, I mean, if it works, we play it. If it doesn't work, we don't play it. So, and we've done collaborations. Every year we do a collaborative project and invite composers from all over the country and sort of overseas to, it's called Chinese Whispers. And we do this collaborative piece where every person writes about 10 bars of music, and we hand it on, and a new piece of music sort of gets created, and then
like a snowball effect almost.
Yeah, yeah. So, and we do that, and then so yeah, I'm really open to. I mean, the ensemble exists to perform music, so if there's some good music around, we'll perform it. So we especially like sort of new sort of creative music. There's so many big bands out there playing historical music really, really well. So, yeah, we like the original new music.
In Sydney here, we have the Jazz Groove Association, which you'd be aware of. You've formed the Listen/Hear Collective. Now, tell us what the Listen/Hear Collective is all about.
It started, yeah, by four of us. There's myself, Johannes Lubers, who lives in Perth, who has a great 10-piece band. Andrew Brooks from Melbourne, who has a band called Motion. And a guy who used to be in MFO but now lives in London, Dan Thorne. And it's just, it's sort of like a record label, but it's more just a coming together of creative people. We've released this album and a band by Motion, and Johannes' album's on it. We'll be releasing, Tim Jago has a new band called The Grid, and we'll be releasing that album soon. And basically the dream is to have, you know, all the artists that are on the label then sort of collaborate and do different projects together. So we're also looking at sort of electronic you know, sound art artists, sort of improvised rock musicians, and so just having a really creative bunch of people that collaborate and just create these sort of new projects.
Now, the current album, Well Maybe Someday, that was recorded live at the Sound Lounge, as I mentioned, here in Sydney a couple of years ago. It sounds to me like everything seemed to be in line that night, everything aligned, you know. It's a fantastic sound. Did you record this with the intention to release it as an album, or did you simply realise after you played back that you had something special?
Well, it had been a pretty gruelling travel. Well, I organised to record it. I just wanted to capture the band while we were touring. And it was sort of towards the end of the tour. We did Wednesday night Byron Bay, Thursday night Canberra, Friday Albury Wodonga, Saturday Sydney, and then Sunday Melbourne, and we'd driven the whole way.
Wow.
So we were, after the gig in Sydney, we recorded it. Everyone was pretty disappointed. We just thought, oh no, we were all so tired, and it was just like, oh no, there was no point in recording it. So I didn't listen to it for quite a while, and then a few months later sort of listened to it and was like, wow, the band sounds really good. You know, it's sort of, I just remember it being really tired, everything being too slow, and the band being sloppy. But when we listened back and thought, oh, we could probably, well, we are going to release this now. So it was, it's amazing how you sort of remember things differently.
Personally.
There's so many factors as well. Because you could remember a gig, what we sort of recorded on a pretty, just one of those MP3 kind of recorders, one of the gigs in Byron Bay or something, and the vibe of the room was really good. Like, the crowd were right into it, and the band was having a great time, and you remember it as really good. But we listened back, and it was actually quite a sloppy night. Like, a lot of people missed things, and there was a few mistakes. But as a performance, it was really successful because, you know, it was just, you know, the stars aligned. You know, the audience, the audience was the... It was a good venue, and you never sort of can tell. It's quite hard to step back and know. Yeah, and we'll be, once we get back from the tour, we'll be recording the new pieces as well, because there's nothing quite like a tour to really get the music.
All together.
The music sounding really good.
Yeah. Well, this is the third major tour for this group, and there aren't too many larger ensembles doing the tour thing in Australia anymore due to the prohibitive cost and, of course,
yes,
the vast distances. But you're showing that it's possible. What's the secret?
You've got to be a little mad. you just need to do it, do a lot of paperwork, filling out, you know, grant applications. And I was just talking to Dave Thiek, who runs the Jazz Groove Mothership, and we were talking about, why do we do this? You know, you invest a lot of time and effort and your own money into because you love it. Yeah, I mean, we don't tour in luxury. It's definitely not the Britney Spears show. But, you know, I mean, I'm lucky to have a group of musicians who love the music and are in it because they really, really enjoy it. So, you know, they put up with a few, you know, less than ideal hotels and, you know, long car trips, and because they're in it because they love it. So, yeah, it's finding the right people and just being passionate and believing in what you do.
Mace Francis, thanks very much for joining us in the studio tonight.
Thanks for having me in here.